Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. The last thing you would ever expect to happen in a small rural town set in the middle of nowhere is a gruesome quadruple homicide. By all accounts, Ina, Illinois is a quiet, sleepy town that did not have much more than a general store, bank, a gas station, post office, and a firehouse. This case really caught my eye. I would assume it is because I come from a town just as small. With roughly only 900 people in the town I grew up in, these small town cases really hit home for me. This case is, of course, from the 80s. 1987 to be exact. It has many strange and brutal details, and is not for the easily squeamish. This is the unsolved story of the Dardeen family murders. Before we get into the inevitable sad and tragic story of the Dardeen family, let's take a few moments to get acquainted with them. The Dardeen family consisted of Russell Keith Dardeen, his wife Ruby Elaine Dardeen, who was pregnant at the time, and their 2-year-old son Peter Dardeen. Both Russell and Ruby went by their middle names, so I will be referring to them as Keith and Elaine throughout the entire video. By all accounts, it seemed that the Dardeen family was very well liked, and no one who knew the family had anything bad to say. The family lived in a trailer home in the woods close to Keith's job at the water treatment facility. Elaine worked at a local office supply store in Mount Vernon. The Dardeens were very active in their local church. Keith and Elaine were even part of a church musical ensemble. Keith apparently sang lead vocals and Elaine played the piano. They were already pinching pennies to save money for Peter's college fund, and as I mentioned earlier, were expecting another baby very soon. In 1987, the Dardeen family was expecting their second child and wanted to move to a better area to raise their family. Not to mention, they really needed an extra bedroom for the baby. To put the cherry on top, there had been somewhere around 15 homicides in Jefferson County alone in the previous 2 years they had lived there. Let's put that into perspective real quick. There are only around 38,000 people living in Jefferson County, Illinois. So, obviously, they decided to put their mobile home up for sale. They were hoping to find a home with a bit more space in Mount Carmel. This had apparently been the area Keith had grown up in. Due to the violent happenings around them, Keith had become increasingly more protective and paranoid about their safety. He was apparently so on edge that when a young woman knocked on their door asking to make a phone call one night, he would not let her in and told her to go away. Some say this is paranoid, but I would say you can never be too safe. It seems the family would never get the chance to move to a safer area, though. It was November 18th, 1987, and Keith had not shown up for work. This is, of course, very out of character for a reliable, dedicated employee like Keith. Keith's boss was instantly concerned and made a call to Keith, but got no answer. Keith's supervisor would call Keith's parents, who both claimed to not have seen or heard from him. By nightfall, police had been dispatched to the Dardeen home to check on them. Keith's father, Don Dardeen, met up with the police to give them his set of keys to the mobile home. Inside, police found a scene so horrific and sick that it would stick with them forever and change everyone involved. First, police found Elaine and Peter Dardenne dead. They had been beaten to death brutally, killed with the baseball bat Keith had bought for Peter earlier that year. Elaine had been beaten so badly that she had given birth, and yes, the killer was so gruesome he even beat the newborn. Whoever had done this had tied up Elaine with duct tape and gagged her. The killer had cleaned up the scene, showing they had no worries to be in a rush to leave the scene. The only person not found was Keith Dardenne. Now, the police did initially think he murdered his own family and was on the run. But these suspicions were short-lived as Keith's body was found in a field not far from the family's home. He had been shot 3 times, and even more gruesomely, his manhood had been severed. Keith's car was found parked outside of the local police station in a nearby town called Benton, which shows how bold this killer was. For those interested, Keith drove a red 1981 Plymouth. From the images I could find, it looked to be a hatchback-style car of sorts. The car was parked just 10 miles from the Dardenne family home. The blood which was found in the car, which is assumed to be Keith's, shows it may have been the site of his murder and mutilation. The case starts to get strange here, though. Elaine and Peter were estimated to have been dead for roughly 12 hours before they were found. Keith had likely been dead for closer to 24 to 36 hours before he was discovered. This detail has made some police question whether this was the work of one killer, or perhaps multiple. Officials were having a very hard time putting together a motive. There was no sign of forced entry, as the back door had been left open. Robbery did not seem to be the motive either, as cash and valuables were easily accessible, but were left untouched. Elaine had not been sexually assaulted, so that rules out that aspect as well. This crime just seems way too brutal, and much too violent, for it not to be something personal. I am not the only one with this mindset, though. The Franklin County coroner, who did the autopsy on the bodies, does not believe this was a random act of violence. He said, and I quote, "I believe it was a very personal, deliberate thing." Police have speculated this could be a crime of mistaken identity. Of course, there are many theories on what happened to the Dardenne family. Keith's mother said she believes someone tried to force Keith into selling drugs, and when he refused, he got, well, I guess, mutilated. Personally, I find this a bit hard to believe simply due to the sheer amount of violence involved in the crime. If he was simply shot, then that theory would make a bit more sense to me. Not to say that isn't what happened, though. Keith's mother also has a theory that someone had the hots for Elaine, and she did not accept his advances and took his rage out on the family. This could be plausible, but wouldn't you think sexual assault would occur? Maybe not, but it does make sense and could be a possible answer. The next theory will make many roll their eyes and click away, but this theory actually does have some semblance of logic behind it. Rumors ran wild among locals that the unborn baby of Elaine had been ripped out from her womb. This, combined with the mutilation of Keith's man parts, sent the locals in a frenzy thinking satanic ritual killings were being carried out in their neighborhoods. The 80s were the absolute height of the satanic hysteria, which really didn't help the officials move this case forward at all. The last theory I wanted to touch on is the serial killer theory. I am unsure where this was suggested or who suggested it, but there was a string of suspected serial killers going on in the area. A regional serial killer was a solid idea at the time, and still could make the pieces to this puzzle make a bit more sense. Despite a long-standing investigation from Illinois State Police, Jefferson County Police, roughly 30 detectives working full-time, and even FBI involvement, nothing outside of a few suggestions and potential profiles came of this. The FBI stated this crime defied their analytic methods, and finding a motive was nearly impossible. It is safe to say that in a small town, such as Ina, Illinois, the locals were all on edge and paranoid after all of these murders. A local Ina resident told the local coroner, that also doubled as a local doctor, that he had lost 14 pounds due to the stress of living next door to the Dardeen family home. The Dardeen family's landlord even stayed up late in the night reading books to stay awake out of fear. Nobody knew why the deaths were happening, which made everyone uneasy and made them feel like a target. This case would sadly, like many others, become a cold case. Now, this doesn't mean it was forgotten, though. Joanne Dardeen was working tirelessly to keep a light on this case. Throughout the 90s, Joanne would call the single detective who was still working the case. She would give them potential leads and asked if they had any new information. She also acquired more than 3,000 signatures from the area to get the Oprah show to share her family's case on the show. But it was declined due to the violent nature of the crime. She did eventually get the case shared on America's Most Wanted after they initially decided not to air the case. They, for some reason, did air the case, though, in a 1998 segment. Sadly, nothing would come from this, though. No new leads or tips. Now, here is where the story gets even more interesting. In 2000, serial killer Tommy Lynn Sells, who was arrested for cutting the throats of two girls in Texas, started to confess to a plethora of other unsolved murders across the country. Sells claimed he was a carny who train-hopped across the country. He claimed to have killed the Dardeen family after Keith had invited him over for dinner after meeting him at a pool hall or a truck stop. He claims Keith tried to get him to partake in a threesome with his wife. This story is highly doubted by many, though. The Dardeen family was extremely religious, and as we mentioned before, Keith was a very cautious guy. Remember how Keith declined a young girl to come into their home to use their phone? Why would he let a 22-year-old man in? This was a common question for the locals at the time. Even though Tommy Lynn Sells would confess to upwards of 70 killings, he was only convicted of 22. Officials were convinced he committed those 22, but sadly the Dardeen family was not included in that list. It would be very unlikely Tommy Lynn Sells killed the Dardeen family, but not impossible. As of now, the brutal and disturbing case of the Dardeen family murders remain unsolved. This case is one of the most heavy and downright violent I have ever looked into. It isn't every day you find a case so disturbing and violent, but have absolutely no motive and no real viable suspects. If you have any information or tips as to what could have happened all those years ago to the Dardeen family, please contact the Jefferson County Police. I would love to know your theories on this case as well. Join the conversation in the comments down below. I get a few different vibes from this case. I almost feel like this is an act of jealousy, maybe. I don't know. It is so hard to judge this crime off of what little context we were given. If you enjoyed this video, please be sure to hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're new to the swamp, want to subscribe and turn on notifications to never miss a new video. I upload them almost every single day. If you're not aware, you can download and listen to your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and pretty much everywhere else you listen to podcasts. If you guys have a case you would like me to check out, feel free to comment those down below. Or be sure to send your resources to swampdweller.net. I love to see what you guys have, and any extra information I can find on cases, the better. Thank you guys as always for supporting the Swamp the way you do. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.